I want to draw a little inspiration from two Tibetan teachers tonight. I kind of want to warm up into what they have to offer. The reflection, the consideration before us, in a way, is when we discover, when we relearn, I guess you could say, when we open to the possibility of being completely still, when we allow stillness, the teaching of stillness, to emerge, and we'll take the sitting meditation as a place where that could happen. Okay, that potential teaching of stillness is a huge, huge possibility there. I want to distinguish possibility from goal. Much of our life in terms of learning things has been connected, whether we like it or not, to goals, to acquisition, to a finish line, to something that we're going to arrive at, to something different than where we are. If you look at your life of learning, if you look at your schooling, if you look at what was impressed upon you as the way to do things, not just the way to do things, the way to be. Often that way to do things and that way to be is connected with a goal, with getting to something. And that something is so often described, if it is described, as other than where you are, different than what you have. And again, there's nothing wrong with this. It's just something that happens. Okay, and it happens to all of us. It happened to our parents, it happened to our parents' parents, and you could just go ahead and trace it on back as far as you want. It's been a chain of conditioned learning that has been passed down. And as much as you might try, if you have children, or are going to have children, to not condition them in this way of goal acquisition, it's going to be pretty darn near impossible unless you truly know what's beyond that. When I say beyond that, someone asked me the other day, what does the word beyond mean? And what happens for you when you hear the word beyond? So if this is what we're talking about in here, right here like this, then beyond would be sort of past that in a way, wouldn't it? That's one understanding of beyond. The other understanding of beyond is that which is most intimate, in the very core, in the very center, or even prior to that which is in this right here. What is prior to that which is in here, right here in this space, would be beyond this space as well, or beyond this thing. So if this makes sense, that much of what we have learned, okay, much of what we have been educated about, has been about goals, been about direction, been about progress, been about a sense of betterment, then is this what meditation is about? Is this what spiritual awakening is about? Is this what realizing your intrinsic, inherent nature or freedom is about? If it is this kind of learning or conditioning that brings this about, then what we ought to do is go about learning exactly what we need to do and how to do it, and then do it to perfection, and then we would have our goal. Wouldn't that make sense? Does that happen like that? If we consider that our intrinsic, our inherent nature is what we already are, and somehow it's gotten lost in the shuffle, maybe in the shuffle of this learning that's been given to us, this way of doing and being, then how are we going to rediscover or reconnect to that by applying the same methods that have literally taken us out of it? So the possibility, as contrasted to goal, in let's take it with from sitting meditation, is that we can truly learn how to let this right here, this structure, this system, truly learn or relearn or discover the possibility of tranquility. of stillness. And in that stillness, as that begins to really register, deeply register, one realizes that that stillness is silent. So we're not only receiving the teachings and the instruction, you might say, of the silence, but also stillness. And we'd have two different words here. Are they the same or the different? Stillness means such and such, silence means such and such, and away we go with synonyms or associations, adjectives, metaphors, and so forth to describe stillness and silence. How else are we going to talk about it? And stillness or tranquility, these words are synonymous for me. This quality, this experience, is one of the factors of awakening, just as is concentration, just as is mindfulness. Mindfulness, that kind of attentiveness that can attend without interfering, without making a judgment about what's going on, without comparing what's going on to other things, and without making decisions about what's going on. This is a very powerful opening to see, just see what mindfulness is, what it actually is. And as we see these factors, and I'm just naming three right here, there are other ones, as we see them and begin to watch them operate, we begin to realize that these are factors of mind, or body, mind, and that these factors have the power to illuminate, yeah, to reveal, to show clearly the nature of what's going on. And you, I, no one is going to be able to really, well, very, very infrequent can anyone, see the nature of what's really going on here, if they're busy not allowing themselves to experience what's happening here. If they're busy distracting themselves, defending against things, struggling with things, fighting with things, and I might add, from where I started tonight, trying to be somewhere other than where they are. How are they going to see the nature of what's really here already? And this nature, of course, is the nature of what we really are. Or as it's said in certain schools of Buddhism, true nature, or original nature, authentic nature, essential nature. You can play with the words, it all means the same thing, really. So what you discover when you begin to allow that stillness and silence to work in your life is that not only is every single moment of it bringing a certain wholesomeness, it's healthy, right? It's rich, it's enriching, it's nourishing. If you want to talk about how it feels good. It's like, does anyone really, in their sort of common sense, whole, you know, right mind, so to speak, have a problem with relaxing? I mean, sometimes people want to be excited and they don't want to be relaxed, okay? But then later, after they've been excited and worked up, who has a problem with relaxing? Who has a problem falling into deep sleep, the relaxation of deep sleep? Well, if you're busy getting something done and you don't want to stop and you're involved, then you don't want to fall asleep. Remember those moments? You've got to keep going, keep going, keep going, keep going. You're excited about what you're doing, you stay up till 3 in the morning. Got a lot done. I feel good about that. Then what do? You pass out. Or you took it till 8 in the morning, you took it till 9, you didn't sleep at all, you went right through, you went 2 days in a row, you didn't sleep, and then you love to disappear into sleep. Just so I'm saying, fundamentally, who has a problem with deep relaxation? However, to relax right here in this, to open in here, right here, to this, in sitting meditation, is not like falling asleep. Quite different than taking a nap. Because what's in here, what's unconscious, subconscious, what hasn't been realized, what hasn't been seen, what hasn't come, been faced, if you sit still and you do not move away, it'll come up. And the possibility, not goal, the possibility is that in sitting, you begin to discover there's nothing, nothing in here that needs to be moved away from. It's absolutely a far-out relative freedom. You begin to get a sense when that emerges what it actually is like to be fearless, what it means to have no fear. So this is a kind of very simple and powerful means and an end simultaneously. You notice how in our conditioned learning it's been means bring us to an end. And then we may have heard along the way that the means are the end. And then one goes, what the heck does that mean? The means are the end. Oh, right. That means the most important thing I could be doing is what I'm actually doing in any given moment. That makes sense. See, our cognitive mind, if you have one, and all of us do, this stuff, it better make sense. It better make sense. Because if it doesn't make sense, then it's nonsense. Or it's confused. Or wait a minute. Maybe there's something about life that I can't comprehend. That I can't figure out by thinking about it. Like my original nature. Anybody in this room contemplated through thought and figured out what your original nature is, and now you're going to be able to, it's going to manifest because you thought about it. It's hidden, actually, that original nature is hidden inside. Like I said last week, the open secret. It's hidden, it's an open secret. It's hidden inside. Even your cognitions. And to say that is something that the mind can't get a hold of, can it? It can't go, right, I know what that is. Where are you going to go with that point right there that I just made? Where are you going to go? You're going to go nowhere. You can't go anywhere. And either your mind is going to go, that doesn't make sense, because I can't understand it. Or it might go, it's not thinking right now. It just goes, Your mouth hangs open a little bit. And in my case, when I first learned to meditate, my favorite part of the meditation was drooling. It really was. I really loved it. Just drool right down the shirt. Just moisten it up right up the front line. Nice long, highway to heaven right down. Here's the first passage, you might say. It's a passage. That's an interesting term, isn't it? Passage. Very short and sweet and to the point. This one here comes from Padmasambhava. Now, Padmasambhava supposedly was born on a lotus blossom. And
so funny.
Exactly. I was just going to put it out and see what happened, and since there was a little bit of a funny response there, hang in there a little bit with it. So, it's actually from a book that was translated of his. You know what it's called? It's called The Natural Liberation Through Naked Vision. That's the name of the book. The Natural Liberation Through Naked Vision. Now, Padmasambhava was the being who brought Tantric Buddhism from India into Tibet and to Bhutan in the 8th century. Okay, and don't forget, he was born on a lotus blossom. Watch this. One does not err by perceiving. One errs by clinging. But knowing clinging itself as mind, it frees itself. Sure. One, and we talk about that one refers to us. One does not err by perceiving. One errs by clinging. But knowing clinging itself as mind, it frees itself. There's a teaching actually in the Dzogchen tradition of Tibetan Buddhism. It's called the self-liberation of suffering. The self-liberation of suffering. Once a human being experiences life themselves, relationships, what's going on here, as to some extent unsatisfactory, which means they're realizing the First Noble Truth, which means they're seeing suffering. Usually, they get somewhat interested in not experiencing that. Not always. Not always. But in many cases, this is it's almost a thunderclap in some cases, or just a pop of look here at this. You perceive yourself as hurting, and you'd prefer not to be hurting. And then you go about, you may, attempting to not hurt, attempting to not suffer. And maybe you do this, 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 you do this. Big list of possible things that you do, or see if you cannot do, how about that one too, so that you don't suffer, because you prefer not to. But even as you engage in these things that you do or don't do, aimed at not suffering, the suffering doesn't end. It lessens, perhaps, it dissipates, it thins, sometimes it actually seems to go away altogether, but then it comes back. Maybe it comes back and it's less vigorous, it's less intense, it's less thick, it doesn't last as long, but it seems to come back. And you've associated, perhaps, that freedom or liberation means there is no more suffering. There is no more anguish, no more pain, no more distress. You've associated this. You don't necessarily know what you're talking about within yourself. But you've hooked it up like that, perhaps. And then you hear this. One does not err by perceiving. One errs by clinging. And when it's discovered that actually most of what your mind is doing, even when it's creative, it's doing things that are, you would say, good. Other people tell you they're good. That was beautiful. You did a great job. Somebody said that to me the other day. I really like what you did. That was a great job. And then he added a little additional piece for me. He said, you should feel good about yourself. I was amused. I thought it was great. You should feel good about yourself. Okay. Think so? Being a nice guy, I guess, right? Most of what the mind is doing, even when it's being creative and going about doing things that are good for other people, so to speak, or oneself, you know what the mind's doing? It's clinging. It's clinging. Even as you have the experience, let's say, of your mind, whatever that is, body, here it is, letting go. Sometimes hidden in that so-called letting go, that release, there's a clinging that isn't even at times visible. So what am I talking about now? I'm saying that when this particular tendency, let's call it deeply ingrained habit, born from ignorance, what ignorance? Ignorance means not seeing things the way they truly are. Not seeing the true nature of life. Not seeing the true nature of living and dying, because life is living and dying. and one's no way better or worse than the other. The only thing dualistic here, the only thing that divides life up into better, worse, higher, lower, front, back, and all this, is the mind. What mind? The mind that's clinging. And if we go into why is the mind clinging, you could play around with that and come up with something that might make sense and feel true. But I would keep it simple and simply suggest the mind is clinging because that's its habit. It's learned to do it. It's been taught to do it. It's been rewarded for doing it. It knows exactly how to do it without even thinking about it. And if you sit around saying, I think I won't cling, now you're clinging to not clinging. So isn't it fascinating? Again, from the quote or the passage, but knowing clinging itself as mind, it frees itself. This is the self-liberation of suffering. Once it's clear that clinging is born from ignorance, it's born from misunderstanding. That helps a lot. It does. But clinging may continue to unfold and manifest and drive the very life that you say is yours until it stops. And there's no guarantee that I know of that it's going to stop at clinical death. Interesting contemplation, huh? There's no guarantee that it's going to stop this clinging. Yet, seeing this clinging, seeing this mind, and I'm suggesting to you that's mostly what the mind is about. Seeing this from this invisible, ever-present, illuminated awareness that is not locatable, seeing this clinging, it undoes itself. This is the self-liberation of suffering. And everything else, so to speak, of any type, quality, texture, tone, inflection, any other thing, in addition to clinging, when seen for what it really is, and that means it's not interfered with, it's not manipulated, it's not fought with, denied, avoided, none of that. It's simply seeing, which is love itself that sees. Unconditional love itself that sees. That thing shows its true nature. And its true nature, this is a bit of a jump here, its true nature, clinging's true nature, everything's true nature is inherent intrinsic freedom itself. No exception. Nothing outside. So this tantric Buddhism that Pavasambhava brought to Tibet and to Bhutan was completely, utterly, and from the get-go, non-dual. It wasn't dualistic and then it's going to open into non-dual. It was completely non-dual from the get-go. And I've been saying tonight, I repeat myself, the only thing dualistic here is the mind. And what is the root of that dualistic mind? I said it already. Clinging. And if you, whatever you perceive yourself to be, even if you perceive yourself to be awareness, or the witnessing consciousness, attempt to remove clinging, you will manifest more clinging. For myself, when I first became fascinated and sort of drawn, helplessly, I would add, into meditation, there would be times when the meditation would become very blissful, and whether I was drooling or not didn't matter, but sometimes I was, and I wouldn't know it until I stopped. I wouldn't know where my head was, I wouldn't know where my body was, I wouldn't know where my breath was, I wouldn't know where I was. I disappeared, and yet I was somehow at the same time. And I would come out of this kind of experience, and I would feel utterly blissful. I would look around, and everything that I saw was shimmering, everything that I heard was shimmering, everything that I felt was shimmering, and I thought, I'm free. This is it. And then it would go away. And I go, whoa, guess I'm not free. Actually, this doesn't feel as good where I am now. This actually hurts. Ow. Nothing was bothering anything, me, in this shimmeringness. And now I'm screwed. Or I'm back to something more familiar. Now you can imagine, and I'm not alone in this, I went after that experience over and over and over. And I actually figured out a way to kind of sit and breathe and do my mantra at that time and whatever, and it would come back. And I actually thought I could make it come back, because it seemed like what I was doing was making it come back. I didn't really know what I was doing. This was very random and haphazard. And then after a while of this sort of, you know, this back and forth, this dualism between feeling great and feeling not so great, I got utterly disgusted with the whole game. It was a huge disappointment. I was expanding and then I was contracting. I was expanding and I was contracting. Back and forth, I went like an accordion. And this out here, oh boy, was always better than this. Because that's what the conditioned mind, the clinging mind, was saying. I didn't even know it was the clinging mind. I didn't even have the word clinging in my vocabulary. I'd never heard of it. But it was going on. Got that in retrospect. See, we actually think we're in the moment. It's more like we're the wake behind the boat. The boat is the moment, and we're in the wake behind the boat. Or you're the tail behind the shooting star. The shooting star is the moment. The shooting star is the illumination itself. You're the wake behind that. You're the sparkling behind that. You try to catch up to it. You can't. That's how insight works too. So I hope this is making some sense. At the same time, these words, just like the qualities of concentration, mindfulness, tranquility, can help bring the attention, or you might say presence, that makes it a little less personal. See, we tend to call the attention that's here my attention, the presence that's in this room, like, is it just in these bodies? Or does it kind of something that's really shared. There's a presence that we're all together in. These things, including words, can help to actually point at, and even to some extent point into, and even to some extent help dissolve the perception that's filtered through clinging. Prabhasambhava said the perception's not the problem. He's talking about what's called direct perception, true perception, not distorted, conditioned, limited, habituated, fueled by ignorance perception. And perception, again, just to define the term, is the way things are seen. And I don't just mean with the eyes, the way things are perceived, the view. But what's happening right now? There's a view here. So you could start to think maybe not, that clinging's the enemy. Clinging is to be removed. After all, didn't the Buddha say the cause of suffering, the second noble truth, the cause of suffering is clinging? So then maybe I should try to get rid of it. We kind of already went through that, didn't we? If you're going to try to get rid of it, now you're clinging to not clinging. And you're just going like this inside. Round and round. You're already going like this inside, have you noticed? Sometimes it's this way, sometimes it's this way, sometimes it's faster, sometimes it's slower, sometimes the circle or whatever the shape is gets bigger and wider. This keeps going like this, like an accordion. Equanimity is another factor that helps. Can remove, literally, it can cut right through the tendency to prefer this over that. It can cut right into and through and go beyond. That state itself, equanimity, can take you right beyond the tendency to divide this world into better and worse. To divide the common well-known vicissitudes, pleasure, pain, loss, gain, fame, shame, praise, and blame. To divide your world based upon those things that happen to all of us. In the course of a lifetime, you get some of this. Even Andy Warhol said, you've got to be famous for at least one day. Thank you, Andy. Even for people who think, there's no way that I'm famous. Just look in the mirror, as you are, yourself. It's the vanity that I talked about last week. You like yourself, so you're a little famous with yourself. And then life's moving through these vicissitudes. And just when you think you've got wonderful gain happening, oh, I've had so many gains, and whatever. Meditation, the stock market, your family's organized, everybody's healthy. In a second, boom. Death can come, boom. Illness can come, boom. Loss can come, boom. Somebody praises you on Tuesday, and they blame you on Wednesday. You like yourself on Sunday, and on Monday you're not so sure. On Tuesday you feel poetic, on Wednesday you can't think a thought clearly. Round and round it goes. Where it stops, who knows? It can stop, that dance that I just described can stop when you learn, relearn, discover what it means to sit, stick with that for the moment, ultimately be. Because that's what sitting is about. It's about being, it's not about doing. Sit and be in such a way where there's nothing to run away from. There's nothing to run away from. And as you realize there's nothing to run away from, what opens up right inside that, like that open secret, is there's nothing to get. Wow. When there's nothing to run away from, there's nothing to get. Wow. Far out. What's been happening? What's been happening in the eternal now? This is the teaching. This is what I've been looking for. This is my salvation. Only thing is, the you that you perceive yourself to be goes away in that eternal now. You do not exist as a separate being. Now, people have this opening and they still feel themselves as separate from that eternal nowness. So you're getting a glimpse of it as if it's happening outside of you subtly. But you can't deny this is the real deal. I'm looking directly at the truth of the way things are right now. I'm seeing this as much as I might be over here and it's over there. Still dualistic. This here is from Milarepa. Now Milarepa had an amazing life, another Tibetan teacher, later historically than Pavasambhava. Apparently he committed murder at one point in his life. Quite an interesting story. Look him up on the internet. Milarepa. These are instructions that Milarepa gave to a young woman who was asking advice on meditation. Now, when I received this teaching, I was practicing in England. Passed through London to get to this place in England. And the teacher was a very lovely woman from the Isle of Mallorca, off of Spain. And I liked her very much. I liked her energy. I liked her presence. I liked the way she was teaching. She seemed appropriately wild in my perception of things. She had very big eyes and they were very bright. And she looked like she was ready to explode, at least that was my sense. I found that attractive. She read this, and I looked for my first moment, and I ran up to her, and I said, I couldn't remember all of it, and so I pretty much ran up when I could, you know, without being rude, at the end of the retreat, and I asked, can I have that teaching? And she very graciously wrote it down for me. So again, these are instructions that Malarempa gave to a young woman who was asking advice on meditation. Malarempa responded this way. Look at the sky. Without increasing it nor diminishing it. Look at the mountains. Without moving away from them nor holding on to them. Look at the sea. Without getting lost on the surface nor in the depths of it. Look at the mind without altering it in any way. Now, is not the imagery, those natural images, the sky, the mountain, the sea, this is literal and metaphorical. This is the sky, the sea of the mind, the landscape of the mind. And the good news is that non-dual truth that is the sky, that is the ocean, that is the mountain, is ever shining for us. That's why the word Dharma has a synonym that's very common in our English language, nature. The nature itself, the natural world, is Dharma. So the essence of that is all through it. The whole thing is essence. The whole thing is expressing non-dual truth. Except that you might think you're doing this looking. Yeah? That you are going to look at the mind without altering it in any way. How are you going to do that? By trying to stop clinging? What this is revealing is that the sky, the mountains, the ocean, and that possibility of perceiving without any interference liberates the mind from itself. And then it's not even about you looking at the mind without altering it in any way. The mind is free already to do exactly what it needs to do. That's the open, hidden secret. That everything is already doing and being exactly what it needs to do and be. They forgot to tell me this as they started to educate me. Nobody said this. They talked to me and you perhaps about the alterations, about the adjustments, about this and that and the achievement. And that's fine. Have a good time becoming a better guitar player. Just don't confuse that with the realization of your true nature. Because the realization of your true nature is already in the D chord. It's not going anywhere. It's fully itself. And this is complete, no exception. Everything is already its true nature. It's that intimate. It's that close. It's so close, the word close doesn't work. Because see, close suggests a relationship, doesn't it? We're talking about where relationship falls away. And it's just what is. Okay. Questions?